I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. We've got managing editor Vanessa.
Hello.
Writer Flora.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about three missions to Mars, a surprising discovery at Stonehenge, and the latest political events in the US. Plus, we'll be having a debate about money. But before all of that, seeing as we're talking about Stonehenge, I want to know, what is the best historical landmark you've ever visited? Vanessa, go for it.
Well, there are pictures of me wearing enormous flares and my brother's jumper actually sitting on the stones of Stonehenge, back when that was still allowed. But the best one, probably the Tower of London, because Traitor's Gate, the Crown Jewels, scary croaking birds, it's just got everything.
I've been there and I agree with you. It is a great day out. Tower of London, it feels like you're just seeped in history. Flora, how about you?
I went to an amazing Roman temple in Lebanon, on the border between Lebanon and Syria, called Baalbek. And not many people know about it, but it's the biggest Roman remains anywhere in the world. It makes Colosseum in Rome look like sort of, you know, just some little stones. And obviously there were very few tourists because it's in quite a dangerous part of the world. But I went about 2 years ago and it was just this amazing sense of history kind of right there. And incredible what humans built thousands of years ago.
Wow, I've never heard of it. That's amazing. And Kieran, how about you?
I've gone for somewhere as well that gave this incredible atmosphere, although much less impressive, I'm sure, which was the battlefield where the Battle of Culloden took place, which was sort of the final conflict in the 1745 Jacobite Rebellion, which was a battle between mostly people living in Scotland and the English. And the English won this battle, and it still just has this feeling to it of sort of being lost in time. It's always really foggy there. It was quite a grim sort of day, and it just has this atmosphere of what that must have felt like to sort of be running across this heathland in battle. It was just incredible.
Be honest with me, Kieran, did you slightly reenact it yourself when you were there?
I cannot comment on that, Bex.
Yeah, I just had to check. I'm going to go for a similar Flora vibe, actually, a kind of Roman vibe, because I am very near Hadrian's Wall right now in the north of England. And I'm very near Chester's and Halsted's, which are very old Roman forts. And you can wander around there and pretend to be a Roman. And also, it's just amazing being back to a time when that long ago. So I'm going to go for the Roman vibe there. I also want to know what everybody's favourite fact is from this week. Vanessa, what have you learnt?
Well, I'm really intrigued to find out that wiki, as in Wikipedia, is the Hawaiian word for quick or hurry.
I didn't know that. So I guess it means quick kind of encyclopedia type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've always wondered what that wiki thing came from. Well, thanks to the Week Junior, I now know.
Yeah, that's actually blown my mind a little bit. Flora, how about you?
I was also fascinated to find out lots about Wikipedia this week, thanks to the Week Junior. And I learned that Jordan Hill Railway Station was the 1,000,000th entry on Wikipedia, on the English language Wikipedia, and it's 5 stops from Glasgow. Trains on the North Clyde line pass through without stopping, and it has a unattended car park.
I am glad you gave me that fact, because I was going to ask where on earth Jordan Hill was, so thank you for being my Wikipedia there by telling me. Kieran, what have you learnt this week?
Well, sorry to ruin the trend. I'm moving away from Wikipedia. I learnt this week that more than 6.8 billion disposable face masks have been used globally each day during the pandemic. But on the good news, scientists in Australia have now found a way to turn them into a road surfacing material so that they don't go to waste.
Wow, so we could drive on face masks.
It's the future.
Oh man, amazing. Gosh, technology's great. Now it's time for Real or Rubbish. Kieran, tell me a story and I will try and guess whether it's true, false, real or rubbish.
Let's start with a question that I'm pretty sure I know the answer to. Bex, do you like chocolate?
Sorry, yes is obviously the answer. Yes, you're right. Yes, I do.
Thank you. I was on tenterhooks there. Well, depending on how you like your chocolate, some news from Germany this week could either be the best news ever or the worst news. And that is the fact that in Germany, rules are being changed on what can be called chocolate. And from now on, all chocolate bars must be made from 100% cacao in order to be labelled as chocolate. And cacao is one of the main ingredients in a chocolate bar, as I'm sure you know, along with sugar and milk. And it's made from the seeds of the cacao fruit, which comes from cacao trees. How many times can I say the word cacao in 30 seconds? So the head of Germany's food regulation agency has said that they want to introduce new rules to make chocolate bars more healthy, because they would contain less sugar if you didn't add in the extra sugar in the milk. And the juice of the cacao will replace what would normally be that sugary milk confection. So what do you think? Is this the sweet truth or a delicious lie?
Wow. So as somebody who, as you know, I love my chocolate, you know, I have a Google alert for the word chocolate just going on every now and again. this is interesting because cacao is kind of bitter, isn't it? Am I right in thinking that? So the idea of not putting sugar in is quite difficult.
Yes, so the cacao you'd normally get in chocolate, you know, if you pick up a bar of dark chocolate that's like 70% or 80%, then that's going to be quite bitter. But the idea in Germany is that you would replace what would normally just be sort of sugar with the juice of the cacao, which is bitter.
So it would be more natural, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's, I mean, can you... I'm just thinking out loud here. Can you change the recipe of something without people being up in arms? Because people will miss the class. Like, if somebody said to me, you know, we're changing the recipe of dairy milk or Mars bar, I'd be pretty annoyed. So the idea of changing the taste of it would be weird. Ah. Oh. And again, as usual, you're just staying quiet, which is, you know, fair enough.
I just like to let you go in circles, Bex.
I know, just,
you
know, spiral.
Go on your own journey.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that journey, I'll be honest with you, could last for another day. So I'll pipe down a little bit now, and I'll have a think about that real or rubbish story. And if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show. We can find out the answer together. So now it's time for our three big stories from this week. Flora, what have you been finding out about?
I have been learning all about the impeachment trial of the former US President, Donald Trump. So on the 13th of February, he was cleared of the charges against him. An impeachment is a very interesting thing in itself. It's a process by which Congress, and that's the name for the politicians who make laws in the US, can charge the president with a crime. Congress is made up of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And so first, in an impeachment process, first the House of Representatives have to vote for the impeachment trial, which they did on the 13th of January, and then the Senate holds the trial. So Trump was on trial accused of using his powers as president to provoke violence. Some of you may remember the Capitol Hill riots at the beginning of January, and that was the trial alleged was connected to his speech at the rally he held on that day. And after that speech, rioters stormed the building where Congress meets, and there were clashes with police and people were injured and even five people died. But the complications in the impeachment proceedings in this case is that Trump is obviously no longer the president. Now we've got Joe Biden as the president. I say we, America has got Joe Biden as their president. And impeachment is a process for the president. However, the prosecution's case set out why they could convict him, why that was constitutional, and why he was guilty. They also gave more evidence from the riots, so they played sort of video footage and audio footage that expressed the violence of it all. But Trump's lawyers came back saying that he's actually already been removed from office by the voters who elected Biden, not Trump, so, you know, job done. And for that reason, many people voted against his being called guilty. And in the Senate, two-thirds of people have to vote in order to impeach the president, and that's 67 votes. 57 voted that he was guilty, seven of whom were from his own party, the Republican Party, so he was cleared. After it, Trump said that the impeachment was a witch hunt, which means an attempt to punish someone's views rather than what they've actually done, and that his mission to make America great again has only just begun. Meanwhile, President Biden was not involved at all. He steered clear of the whole thing. And after, he referred to it as this sad chapter in our history. He said that democracy, which means the people's right to choose their own leaders, must be defended and that it's a fragile thing.
Now, Vanessa, tell me, what have you been finding out about this week?
Well, now that we've established that Stonehenge and I go back a long way, possibly not quite as far as Stonehenge's entire history, but still, you know, long enough, there's been a discovery this week. Apparently, the ancient stone monument, as it is on the plain, that looks like it's been there forever, is apparently something of a prefab, or at least it's the result of a dry run, because scientists have discovered that it was built in Wales first before being moved to England. Now, as you know, lots of work has been done in studying Stonehenge, particularly over the last few decades. And it's been known for a long time that the stones, which are enormous for anyone who hasn't actually seen them in real life, are carefully positioned in such a way that on the longest day of the year, the rays of the rising sun hit the stones in a particular way. More recently, someone wondered if it worked on the longest day, perhaps it also works on the shortest day. Yes, it was found that stones also align with the sunrise on the shortest day of the year. Mysterious, mysterious. There are lots of ancient monuments, Newgrange in Ireland, for example, that are mathematically aligned to the sun. And we still don't know why, but it was obviously very important to the people in those days, because such immense effort was required to move these enormous stones, in the case of Stonehenge, from 150 miles away. Anyway, what has been revealed is that the stones in the circle at Stonehenge were first part of a stone circle at a site called, I've been practicing this, Wine Mound. I looked it up on Google, so I think that's how you pronounce it. So sorry if I've got that wrong. Apparently it means peat moorland in Welsh. Anyway, archaeologists started digging there because there are four large stones visible already there. So they started having a look round and they found several holes, well, lots of holes, in fact, left by big upright stones arranged in a circle, about 30 to 50 of them. Obviously, some of them are a bit, you know, a bit unclear as to whether it's actually would hold this big stone. Anyway, the circle is the same size as Stonehenge. Its stones lined up in the same way and the stones come from that particular part of South Wales. I think that's strong evidence. Mike Parker-Pearson, who has been leading the discovery team, says that it's as if the people just vanished once the stones were moved to Stonehenge.
It has been quite the week for space travel, with three spacecraft that are due to arrive at Mars this month already entering the red planet's orbit. And as we record this, which is on the 18th of February, we're waiting for the third spacecraft, which is called Mars 2020, which was launched by NASA, the US space agency, and it is carrying the Mars rover Perseverance, which I think we've spoken about on the podcast before. But that is possibly the most exciting of the three, and I'm sure we'll be watching that with close eyes this afternoon as it makes its descent. But of the first two then, so the very first one to arrive this year is called Al Amal, which means hope in Arabic, and it was launched by the United Arab Emirates last July. And it's the first ever spacecraft to be sent by the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, to Mars. It reached orbit on the 9th of February and beat the Chinese spacecraft Chanwen 1, which means questions to heaven, which arrived the following day. And Al Amal, or Hope, as I said, it is the one that's going to stick in the air. It's not got any plans to land on Mars. It's going to spend the length of one Martian year, which is 687 days on Earth, travelling around the red planet. It's going to be measuring how different gases, including hydrogen and oxygen, leak from the planet into space. The reason it's wanting to do that is because the chemicals were once bonded together as water on the Mars surface. So if it can understand how those chemicals eventually break off from each other and into space, it might give us a better idea of the amount of water that was on Mars, for example. And it's also going to send detailed images of the planet back to Earth. So that's an exciting one. Then we have Chanwen 1, which is the Chinese spacecraft. It arrived the next day. It's going to spend a couple of months orbiting the planet. And then in around May or June, it will make its descent to the surface. It's the first time that China has worked by itself to send a mission to Mars. So that was also very exciting. There was a bit of a contrast between how the two countries celebrated their spacecraft arriving. So in the United Arab Emirates, there was huge celebrations. The world's tallest building, the Burj Khalifa, which is in Dubai, was lit up in its honour. It was broadcast live on the news. It was all very exciting. Whereas in China, when Chanwen 1 arrived, we didn't find out it entered its orbit until after that had happened. I think with perseverance, I'm sure listeners listening to this, of course, it will already have happened by the time you're listening to this podcast. But we hope that that will happen this evening. It faces what has previously been described as the 7 minutes of terror, which is the time between it starting its descent and people on Earth knowing how well it's progressing with that. It's very difficult to land on Mars because the planet has a very thin atmosphere. So, you know, if you were bringing something back from space into Earth, you just deploy a parachute and you slow right the way down. If you do that on Mars, a parachute's not enough and you will just crash into the planet. So they have to use several different techniques to make sure that works. So hopefully this time next week we can discuss Perseverance and how it survived that dangerous bit of the journey. But we're definitely keeping our fingers crossed that it'll be good news by the end of the day.
It's cool finding out about something in almost like real time. I also do love your enthusiasm for space missions, Kieran.
It's the bread and butter of the Science and Tech page and Science and Nature. It's very exciting. And it's the busiest Mars has been for a very, very long time. You know, these three missions are all taking advantage of a window of time last summer where Earth and Mars were perfectly aligned, that you could just sort of skip from one planet to the other without having to travel so far through space, still millions of miles, but, you know, a little bit easier than it might normally be. But it does mean, hopefully, that this year we will get lots of exciting news stories about Mars, because that's where humans can go next in the most easy manner. You know, if we can figure out a way to survive on Mars, then it won't be too long before humans start heading there, hopefully.
Time for the big debate. So this week we are asking whether it's time to stop using cash. Who can tell me a little bit more?
That's me again. You'll be sick of my voice. So 50 years ago, on the 15th of February 1971, the UK introduced a new money system, and it is the one that we have today, which, of course, as we know, is made up of pounds and pence. It's called the decimal system, and it's easy for people to follow and work out sums because 100p equals £1. Before that, it was slightly more complicated. There were pounds, shilling, and pence, and you had to do some tricky sums to work out how much change you were due whenever you did a transaction, because 12 pence made a shilling, and there were 20 shillings in a pound. So there were 240 pence in a pound. That's too much maths for me. These days, there are more ways to pay than ever, of course, including using your smartphone or your watch. And during the pandemic, many businesses asked for customers to pay with contactless or card transactions instead of handing over cash.
I've got to say, my dad did try to explain the old money system to me and I just tuned out immediately. It was pretty tricky. But I do think this is a really, really interesting one. So this is Flora versus Vanessa. So I guess up first, we've got Flora. A minute on the clock for you, Flora. You're arguing why we should stop using cash. So whenever you're ready, take it away.
Have you ever had the mortifying experience of standing in a queue that's getting longer and longer as you dig around in the bottom of a pocket or a purse for that 20p, the exact change you need? It's very satisfying to get rid of, but so annoying to everyone standing behind you. Cash breeds a lot of resentment and division, not just in this case, in the supermarket queue, but also by stealing. Cash is quite easy to pull out of someone's pocket, much easier perhaps than a phone or a wallet, but it's much harder to get back. If you lose your bank card, you can cancel it and replace it with a new one, sometimes even the same day. Well, when cash is lost, it's gone forever. I was once given a £50 note by my aunt in a birthday card, which I put somewhere, and I never found it again. And I can't go back to my aunt and say, why didn't you transfer the cash to my bank account? I can't say that, can I? But that's what I'm thinking, even to this very day.
Wow, so that's an argument based on a personal resentment there, I would say, but hey, a good one. Right, so Vanessa, it's up to you to argue against Flora. Whenever you're ready, go for it.
That £50 in the card, I'm sorry, she wins. She wins. That's appalling. I'm ready.
Maybe one day I'll find it then.
Right. Well, there are lots of great arguments in this week's magazine, but I've got a few more. Did you know that the first coins were invented in Mesopotamia around 5,000 years ago? There's a reason why cash has been around for so long. It's flexible, transportable, and easy to use anywhere. Yes, once money is stolen, it's gone, but don't carry large sums around with you. There are about 1.2 million people in the UK who haven't got a bank account and have to use cash. That's poor people, people without, migrants without proper paperwork, and people who haven't got a home address. In other words, it's people who are already having a really tough time. By using cash, we show that it's still needed. With cash, you can give money to buskers, you can buy things on market stalls, give a coin to someone begging. You can't do this with cards. And what about presents? When you open a birthday card, wouldn't you rather see a lovely £10 note inside? Not a screenshot of a PayPal receipt. No, I say cash is king.
Wow, lovely stuff. Both well under a minute today, those arguments, which, as you know, as a stickler for time, I'm impressed with. Kieran, what do you reckon?
Well, first of all, I hope that Flora's aunt is listening to this podcast and will write in next week to get her side of the argument across.
I feel confident that she's not, I'm afraid.
In terms of the debate, I think I'm going to agree with Vanessa. But my particular reason for that is I think that it's so much easier to save money if you can actually see it rather than it just being numbers on a screen, because it's so easy if you don't have cash in your hand to just keep tapping away and you sort of lose track of what you've spent money on. Whereas if you put cash and coins diligently into a piggy bank, it's much easier to save your money for a rainy day.
A very good argument, Kieran. I've got to say, it was a close run thing for me this week. I would go Vanessa, but just because I quite like the feeling of having cash and, like, it's quite old school and there's something quite nice about the transaction of it. But it's a tough one, I've got to say. So this is where we need the listeners to get involved. Tell us what you think right now. Go respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/polls. Or email us hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why. So last week on the podcast, we debated whether event TV is better than binging it. So in our poll, only 42% of you voted yes in favour of event TV, while 58% of you preferred to watch several episodes in one go. So here are some of your comments.
Sophie emailed to say, I think that anyone can choose what to watch, but I'm choosing to binge because you don't have to watch it all in one go. Amara added, I think watching a series all at once is great. If you are watching the episodes weekly, you lose the story and you forget. It's like reading a book and pausing for 5 minutes. Every page you read, you lose the rhythm.
Several listeners left their thoughts on Apple Podcasts. Siraj, age 10, posted, I think that event TV is better than binging because with binging, if you're watching lots of films one after another, like the Harry Potter series, which is 8 films, then you won't get any fresh air and it won't be very good for your health. Good point. Also, if there's something you really want to watch, then you shouldn't watch it all in one go because as soon as you finish, it's ended. And if you watch it one at a time, then the tension builds and it gets more exciting.
Lily, who also let us know that she was born in the year of the rabbit after our discussion about the Lunar and Chinese New Year last week, she commented, I think that both binging and weekly TV are great. With binging, you are either in your room on your own or with family, so I think that weekly TV is better as you are usually with family, which boosts your well-being. With binging, though, you can watch at your own pace. I'm torn.
Oh, lots of good arguments there. I knew I could rely on Week Junior listeners and readers to get involved. So if you want to hear your voice on the podcast with your opinion on this week's debate, well, it's super easy. Go grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate. Then send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it out on next week's show. Now, I think we've just got time to recap and reveal the real or rubbish story. Kieran, can you remind me what it was again, please? It was pretty chocolatey, right?
This is our choc fest. Yes, it's the fact that Germany is changing the rules as to what can be called chocolate. And under those new rules, all chocolate bars must be made from 100% cacao.
I really don't know with this because cacao is obviously very pure and it's good to have, like, you know, the original organic ingredients in it. But it seems like a big stretch to change all of the recipes of chocolate. But then, you know, there are some rules around food, like you can't have cheddar unless it's from, you know, the area of cheddar or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I'm going to say it's real. I'm going to say it's true. I'm going to say that's it. I'm going to go real.
So you're saying that all chocolate bars in Germany must now not have any sugar in them, just to clarify.
Oh. Well, when you put it like that. No sugar. But sugar's the best bit, isn't it? Yeah, right, I'll go, no, I think you're trying to test me. I think you're trying to tease me. I'm going to stick with real because I think you're trying to tempt me the other way. Yeah.
Okay, real. Could I get the drum roll, please?
Yes.
It's rubbish.
No!
Yes, I'm sad to inform you that it is in fact the complete opposite of what we said. The German chocolate maker Rittersport has been told that it cannot call its chocolate bar, which is made from 100% cacao, chocolate, because it is too pure and does not contain sugar. It created a bar that used the cacao juice to sweeten the bar instead of sugar, and in response to being told that it wasn't allowed to call it chocolate, Rittersport said the rules were crazy.
You know what? You played an excellent double bluff on me there, because I thought at the end you were trying to get me to change my mind. Like, I thought I was right and you were getting me to change my mind. Oh, man, that was a great one.
It's a high-risk game, Bex. You've got to really push it.
Well done to you for beating me. It's not hard, but you did it. And that is it for the Week Junior show this week. Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at the Week Junior, or email hello@thewikjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. Plus, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.